and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. I have in the studio with me former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. He is pro-tem chairperson of Gerakan Tanah Air and incumbent MP for Langkawi, a seat that he won in 2018 under the Pakatan Harapan banner. He is now seeking to defend that seat on a Pejuang ticket as the Gerakan Tanah Air coalition is not yet officially registered. His decision to defend this parliamentary seat marks Dr. Mahathir's 11th foray into a general election. He's only lost once in 1969 by a margin of less than 1,000 votes. Tun, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join me. I know it's a busy period with campaigning and polling in just a few days. I do want to begin our conversation today with a discussion about the Langkawi constituency and the fact that you won that seat in 2018 by a majority of 25%. What is different then than it is now? And I'm wondering how your strategy has changed for the GE15 elections.
This time around, we have young voters because now 18-year-old and above, they can vote. And they have different ideas and different perception of things. So we need to understand them so that we can cater to their needs. In addition to that, we now have five candidates, which means that the voters will be split into small groups, and it will be quite difficult to determine a very clear cut win by anyone. Okay. So that is the change that has taken place.
All right. So let's touch on the split votes first. We'll go to the young voters in a bit, but touching on this five corner fight this time around. Last time you were only up against UMNO and PAS. Now we have four other candidates vying for the same seat. How might the split votes impact your chances? Are you still confident that you will get a strong majority, or might this be a seat where your confidence will be shaken given the nature of the five-way competition?
I feel I still have a good chance to be the biggest winner, win with the biggest number of votes. Which means that I would have won the election.
Okay, all right. So the young voters, you mentioned there's an increase because of the automatic voter registration and the Undi 18 amendment. Langkawi's electoral roll is set to increase 55% compared to GE14, 35% of whom are first-time voters. Tun, what makes you confident that young people will vote for you?
I have been with them for quite a long time, since I was the member of parliament for Langkawi. I have had occasion to interact with them, to support their views, to support their facilities for them. For example, they may want to participate in sports. We have enabled them to participate in sports. Many are cycling, and they want to have some football team. We have supported them with whatever little money we have.
Beyond just supporting some of their aspirations and desires, do you feel it's important for young people to be able to connect with you, to be able to relate to you? I'm wondering how a young 20-year-old might be able to relate to Tun Dr. Mahathir, 97-year-old former Prime Minister. Do you understand what they want, and do they understand where you're coming from?
Yeah, the young people of today are not shy. They are very aggressive. They are not impressed by your age. If you talk to them, they will give their own views. They will ask questions. I have had sessions with them. I had maybe lunch with them, and then they asked me all kinds of questions. Of course, most of the questions are related to what is happening to the young people.
Okay, so they're concerned about their future, what's happening with the country and where they, what their prospects are. How do you respond to that?
Well, I try to put in simple words what is happening, what has happened before. I pointed out to them that a country goes through changes over time. It's not static. The situation now is not going to be permanent. That it is the result of past action where we changed a country that was dependent upon rubber and tin to an industrialized country. But in the future, there will be this contest between rich and poor, and the poor people, if they are not careful, they will lose a lot of what they have.
It's not just specific to Langkawi, though. This generational shift is happening throughout the country. We see, even in this electoral role, you know, millennials and Gen Zs, they are the bulk of the electoral role. Where do you see the political impacts of such a generational shift in voting power, in a national view?
Yeah, we notice a difference between the older, experienced voters and the new voters. The older, experienced voters are very much attached to their own parties. This especially applies to the Malays. The Malays are loyal to their parties and will support their party even if the party does obvious wrong things. But the younger people, they are not so attached to the party. They have a different view about situations in the country. They are, of course, concerned about what would happen to them in the future. So I think they are concerned that we should get good governance, otherwise they will suffer.
Okay, this is quite interesting, this generational loyalty to a party, even if you see, you know, almost forgiving wrongdoing, given the loyalty, this blind loyalty to a party. I do want to touch on that. One last question on Langkawi. Langkawi as a constituency, Langkawi as an island, has gone through a really difficult time during the pandemic. I think many businesses decimated because of the effects the pandemic has had on tourism. Some of the criticism has been whether you have done enough for the people of Langkawi during these difficult times, especially as the past couple of years has seen your attention dominated by elite politics at the federal level. Would you care to respond?
Well, when I was a part of the government, it was easy to do things for Langkawi. We can increase the investments in Langkawi. But I noticed that when I was not in the government, then the government is not very sympathetic. I have a lot of ideas, I have a lot of proposals for Langkawi, but whatever ideas we have, the government rejects, or they delay. For example, I wanted to build a tower in Langkawi. It took me 10 years to get permission, just to have a tower. And when there is a proposal, for example, to rear prawns in the paddy field, until now, 4 years, I've been asking for permission. They don't even allow us to test whether it is dangerous or not. So this government does not want to be friendly with investors. And this is quite a problem, because investors come to Langkawi, they want to build up Langkawi, but when they approach the government, they would be lucky if the minister wants to see them or not. Some ministers just refuse possible investors. There's one particular case where a new way of teaching children is introduced, and the man who had this new method of teaching children wants to show it to the minister. The minister refused to see him. So we are still stuck with the old methods of teaching people. So this is what is going to happen if I lose the election, or even if I win the election, but I am not a part of the government, Langkawi will suffer.
How are you going to achieve those objectives of not just winning your seat, but ensuring that you or in any way Pejuang and GTA are part of government? What is the game plan, Tun?
Well, if we do not win the majority, we can work with other parties. But we would be very choosy. We don't want to work with people who are criminals. We don't want to work with people who step the back of their friends and things like that.
Okay, can you be very specific with me when you say you don't want to work with criminals or or backstabbers or betrayers? Those are specific people and not entire parties. A party is multifaceted. So are you saying that you would not work with some people in a party, or are you dismissing the party to get altogether?
Unfortunately, the leaders of this party are not only crooks, but they have infected their own supporters, their own members, with that kind of ideology. For example, when they say cash is king, everybody right down the line until the ordinary members, they also think cash is king.
But the man who said cash is king is now in jail, is now in prison. Is there any redeemable value for the party that he left behind? Would you consider, would Pejuang and GTA consider working with UMNO post-general
election? No, I think UMNO is thoroughly spoiled. We find, for example, that when we contested in Johor, when we asked people to vote for Pejuang, their answer is, how much are you going to pay? You see, and this has become general. Not only party members, but even ordinary people nowadays ask for money.
Well, your suggestion to the Election Commission to not allow mobile phones inside the polling centres, that has been accepted.
Yeah.
So it's now been going to be implemented. You argue that this was to avoid voters from taking photos as proof of voting for a certain political party. They might get kickbacks from that party. Why did you raise this issue? Because you raised it before even nomination day, before the campaigning started. What were you responding to?
No, this happened during a by-election in one of our small constituencies. We found that this particular party sent vans to pick up people ostensibly to take them to the polling station. But in the van, they gave money. And they told the voter, if you vote for us, then we will give the rest of the money. And how do they know? They know because when the voter is voting, he takes a picture of his hand, himself, and the mark on the paper to show that I have voted for you and you get extra money. That is the extent of corruption that you find being carried out by some parties.
You seem to know how the game is being played by political parties. Is enough being done to counter some of these rule-breaking, the rule-breaking that you've observed?
Well, that is for the government to act. There are many things that we can do to stop corruption, but the government seems reluctant to act. In fact, this matter should have been brought up in Parliament and debated and passed, but it's only now that they decided that you cannot carry your handphone.
You said to me earlier that some people are loyal to the party, will vote for the party regardless of whatever wrongdoing. And yet now you're saying there are many that will vote for a small cash handout, a small kickback. How do you view the psyche of voters going into GE15, taking into account there has been much uncertainty and turmoil in our political landscape? Voters feel betrayed, feel disaffected, feel disillusioned and disenfranchised. How do you see the voter psyche going into November 19th?
Loyalty to the party is still there, but the money is additional.
It's a bonus, you reckon, like the extra.
The extra. So others who are not loyal to the party, because they are given money, they vote for the party. So people with no money contesting will not get any vote.
Do you think Malaysians are ready to vote across not just party lines, but racial lines and across religious rhetoric lines?
Well, religion and race still play a part. You see, whether you like it or not, the people vote according to their race. For example, if you have a Chinese candidate in a Malay kampung, he's not going to win. If you have a Malay candidate in an urban area where the Chinese dominate, they will not vote for you. So you have to take into consideration the attitude of the people. If you say that it must be multiracial, but the people don't want multiracial parties, then you're not going to win.
Well, where are you getting this from, that people don't want multiracial parties? I guess I'm asking because looking at Pejuang, Pejuang is yet another ethnocentric, ethno-chauvinist, Malay nationalist party. What makes you different from all the other Malay nationalist parties out there?
There are Malay nationalist parties who believe in multiracialism. I admit that. But what we found out was that when we worked with PH in the last election, PH won because for the first time, Malays voted for PH. They didn't like DAP. But because I was a member of PH, they were willing to vote even for DAP.
So they were voting for you, but voting for PH, but voting for you. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know whether it is voting for me or not. But the fact is that before DAP, for example, could win less than 20 seats. But in the 2018 election, they won 40 seats. Where do the 40 seats, the 20 seats come from? From Malays.
Okay. Can I ask you, because you point out, you've been talking a lot about corruption and the detrimental impact it's had on our country, and you blame it on one party. What makes you different from the other ethnocentric Malay nationalist party, Bersatu?
Bersatu? Mm. Bersatu, yes. But Bersatu was hijacked by its president, because the president wants to become a prime minister. According to the PH program, he would not be a prime minister.
So in terms of ideology, is there anything differentiating Pejuang from Bersatu?
Pejuang is different because we are still wholly Malay, whereas Bersatu has now become multiracial.
Okay. Being wholly Malay, does that put you at a disadvantage from getting the support of non-Malays who you need if you want to win certain seats?
Yeah, non-Malays are not so much tied to their party. They want to see a good government, a government that is clean so that they can do business. So we have had discussion with them. We assured them that when we form the government, we will form a good government that will practice, for example, a tender system that is fair, no discrimination. And for these people who are mainly involved in business, a good government that sticks to the rules and the laws of the country is good for them. So although they are not Malays, but they also realize that during the time of independence, a good Malay government resulted in them doing even better than under the British.
So your argument to them is that vote Pejuang and GTA into government, you will ensure a good government conducive for business. Are you then saying that if in that scenario you are then the Prime Minister candidate for Pejuang, you would be leading that government?
I would not want to be a Prime Minister again. I want to give experience to younger people.
What do you mean? And who were you thinking of?
Well, there are several younger people. They can take over. It's up to the party to decide, not for me to decide.
Even as chairperson?
A chairperson maybe, but not prime minister.
Okay, all right. I do want to come back to the issue of Malay votes, and I may press you on this because the question is, with so many options now available to Malay voters, it used to be just UMNO and PAS, and now you have the Barisan Nasional Coalition, you have Perikatan Nasional, and now you have Gerakan Tanah Air or Pejuang. Are you deepening the intra-Malay vote split, deepening that division? And is that your objective, to deepen the divisions among Malays?
There may be many parties, but actually you can divide them into two. One is the bad Malay, one is the good Malay. Choose the good Malay.
Okay, it's that simple.
Yeah, it's that simple.
All right, okay. And I, last type of conversation I want to ask you about the role of Pejuang post GE15. When you were in GE14 in 2018, you were instrumental in changing the game. Post GE15, what is the idea, what is the nature of a coalition government in your view? What iteration of a coalition government would work best for Malaysia?
Well, a coalition should be between parties that are like-minded.
Okay.
Not people who have totally different ideas, but just want to become the government.
Which parties from which coalitions are like-minded with Pejuang and GTA?
Well, there are parties. For example, we look at Sarawak. Sarawak is supposed to be a kingmaker. They are not involved in all these shenanigans happening in the peninsula.
GPS.
Yeah.
So GPS is a coalition that you would be interested to work with to form government.
I would.
Anyone else? Well, you might need the numbers.
We might find Bebas or independent candidates who are not not involved in wrongdoings.
Mm. Wrongdoings. Do you see other parties working together? Pejuang or GTA had recently claimed there was a pact between Zaid Hamidi and Anwar Ibrahim. I do want to ask you, I'm not asking you to reveal sources or anything, but what was the basis of these allegations?
Well, during the time when we were still part of the government, we were still in PH, we heard about Anwar talking to Zaid. Of course, he denies it, but I have good reason to believe that it was true.
And it would still hold, you reckon, for GE?
I think it works out because Zahid would want Anwar to release Najib and drop all the charges against Najib and against Zahid. So he cannot suddenly become prime minister when he is being charged with many crimes.
Would any amount of denying on the part of Anwar Ibrahim or PKR, would any amount of denying on their part convince you otherwise, that there is no cooperation or electoral pact?
A politician who denies should not be taken too seriously.
Okay. My last question is about manifestos. Is there going to be a manifesto from GTA? I think because you famously said when you became prime minister after PH1, you famously said a manifesto is not a Bible, it's just a guide.
Well, definitely a manifesto is not a Bible.
Isn't it a promise that's been made from
a
political party
promise,
to
yes.
a voter?
But it is subject to circumstances. There are many things that happen. For example, they want to abolish death penalty, only to find that it is in the constitution. And to abolish the penalty, you will have to have two-thirds majority, because you are changing the constitution and you find that you don't have two-thirds majority. So it's easy to make a promise. For example, they want to abolish tolls. If they abolish tolls, who's going to look after the roads? You have to maintain the roads and we have to build new roads. Nobody will build because there's no return from investment in that area.
Do you think some of the manifesto promises in this election, do you think they're a bit unreasonable or unfeasible?
Well, many of them talk about giving things to people. They say gula-gula, I mean giving sweets to people. We don't believe in that.
Okay, well, Tun, thank you for joining me on the show today.
You're welcome.
Good talking to you. That was my conversation with former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir. He is seeking to defend his Langkawi seat in GE15 under the Pejuang banner. That wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night. We'll be right back.